Anyway, so today's topic is part one of candlelighting. Candlelighting is a very big topic. Honestly, we could probably get three shurim about it, but we'll have to fit everything we can in to two shurim. And I want to go really from the beginning all the way till the end. The beginning is, why do we light candles? And many, many halachic issues that stem from that, we're going to do already today. Next week, we'll continue with more issues, specifically issues relating to electricity, how the modern world and electricity has impacted the halacha of candlelighting, and especially next week we'll discuss all the quirky cases of eating dinner away from the house, where do you light, sleeping away from the house, in the hospital, in the hotel, all those kind of quirky cases, as well as we will come full circle and also discuss in the second half of next week's year what happens if you forget to light. Oh, exactly. Okay. But, you have to come back next week. No commitment. So today we start, though, at the beginning. And the beginning is a famous Gemara in source number one in Masechta Shabbos. Amar Rav Huna, Haragil Bener, Havin Le Banim Tamid Chachamim. That this is not just any mitzvah, but this is a mitzvah which is a skula. Right, everyone for skulas in all the wrong places. Rav Hershel Shechter always says, the Gemara is full of skulas. The problem is everyone wants all the other ones. But you want to have children who go in the way you want. You want to have children who are going to be committed to Torah. So there are things you can do, aside from, you know, tuition and homework and stuff. But aside from that, says the Gemara, one of them, Haragil Bener. There's a certain skula, which is hard to understand on a purely rational level, but it's in the Gemara. Not a Kabbalistic, not esoteric. It's in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Haragil Bener, commitment, hider mitzvah, seriousness with mitzvah of hadlakas neros, is one of the skulas. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
So how did they become a mitzvah?
Okay. It's okay. It's okay. So the Gemara says, Haragil Bener. So that has to do with the fact that we know in Psukim, Torah is compared to, right, Kinyar mitzvah. So since in Torah or, so because Torah is connected with the light, again, this is not something on a purely rational level. It's obviously, there's something deeper. But in that, within that, we have an association between Neros and Torah. But, as was already alluded to, it's not just a quote-unquote skula. It's not just something that we would do if we want to have good children. It is even more than that. As the Gemara in source number two says, furthermore, Omer Rav Nachman Bar of Zavda, of Armile Amar of Nachman Bar Rav, Amar Rav, somebody said, Hadlokas Ner B'Shabbos, Chova. It is not just a skula, it's not just something you want to do if you want to have good kids. You have no choice. It is a chova, it is a bona fide mitzvah. Now the question, therefore, is, well, what kind of mitzvah is it? What's the reason for the mitzvah? On what authority is it? Is it Doraita, Dorabanan? So the truth is, there is a minority view that sees it as a Torah commandment. But the overwhelming majority of Mefarshim, as we'll see in a moment, view Hadlakas Neros as a mitzvah midrabanan. Now, as we have already seen the last 2 weeks, there are two different rabbinic mitzvos for Shabbos, Kavod and Oneg. So we'll have to see which one of those it fits in. But before we even get to that, the Gemara in source number three mentions another idea. That's another idea, which will have to, maybe overlaps with Kavod or Oneg, but at least for now we'll give it its own words. The Gemara in source number three, again, these are all very well-known ideas, but here you're seeing them in the original. Number three, the Gemara says, if a person had a conflict, Nebuch, again, we can't even know of such poverty, but someone who was so poor, they didn't have enough money for either Hanukkah candles or Shabbos candles. They couldn't do both. Shabbos, Hanukkah, they only have enough money for one. Which one do you do? Says the Gemara, Nerbeso Adif. Shabbos candles comes first. Why? Mishum Shalom Beso. Now, it is important to know, you'll forgive me if I deflate your bubble, but the Shalom bias here is not the kind they spoke at your Sheva Brachos, or under your Chuppah, or anything like that. But that's all nice, and I could easily make a case, and I believe it, that light in the house can help a marriage too. Can't have such a conversation when there's no, right, you know, when people are tired and it's dark out and no one's really interested in talking and seeing how your week was. But, to be fair, Rashi has something a little less romantic in mind. Rashi says, what are Shalom Bayis at the end of that line? It's no fun sitting in the dark. Right, you stub your toe. is probably what Rashi refers to. Right? It's, again, now I would add, and I don't think I'll call it a modern read, but I don't think it's an inconsistent read, that tsar can be emotional tsar too, and it's not only the loneliness, it's also the lack of communication. Obviously, yeah, but we all know, when we've been zocha to it, right, a beautiful Friday night dinner, whether it's with your spouse or your children or grandchildren, right, that is a very beautiful way of spending Shabbos. And when you don't have that, there's a little bit of a tsar, especially if you're used to it or you like to depend on it. But probably not what Rashi had in mind, to be perfectly honest. Rashi's probably talking about something much more prosaic, which is, especially in those days when there was no electricity, if there were no candles in the house was a dangerous place to walk around. It was not a pleasant way to have Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Shabbos candles, I don't know if it's the only reason, but certainly an element of it, is very basic. You want to enjoy Shabbos, you want to get through Shabbos without breaking your toe. So having candles, having light in the house is a very basic necessity. However, it is more than that, or at least it's used, referred to in other ways as well. And this should come as no surprise to you based on the shurim of the last 2 weeks. As I said, we have other areas which go based on psukim in the Nevi'im, but other mitzvos of Shabbos. And in fact, there seems to be a little bit of a debate, if not a confusion, about where Shabbos candles falls. In fact, a debate between two midrashim and sources 4 and 5, the two midrashim also speak about Shabbos candles, but they each assign Shabbos candles a different mitzvah. For example, in source number 4, the Medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni says the following: Neros shel basar v'dam. Right, you have candles, whether it's literally the candelabra you use for Shabbos candles, or harken back in the old days, just your regular everyday light, nothing to do with ritual or mitzvah. Or substitute that in a modern context: what source of light do you have over your dining room table? Says the Medrash, whether it comes to a person, shacheres, oshal nechoshes, hachol lefi kvodo shel adam. You can tell a lot about the stature of a person by how fancy, what material that candelabra was from, right? So you have a little lamp hanging out of the thing, or like me in my house, you know, I got that, you know, uniquely Israel thing where you have the light bulb hanging out of the ceiling. Or do you have a beautiful crystal chandelier? Hakol lefi kvodo shel adam. The Medrash is very real. Hakol lefi kvodo shel adam. Everyone's got, and each person will have a different level of kavod, as reflected among many other ways you can show kavod in life through that. However, says the Medrash, continuing, kavod haShabbos neroseha hein kvoda. Shabbos also has a kavod. Shabbos also has a way of showing itself, and that's through the neros of Shabbos. It's obviously a poetic or a figurative reference. But what it shows is, according to this Medrash, why do we light Shabbos candles? It's a mitzvah of kavod Shabbos. Right? There's a certain dignity you give to the house, to the meal, by making it a candlelit dinner. We'll actually have to get back to this next week when we speak about what role do my little candles have with thousands of watts coming out of the ceiling. Like, what exactly do my candles add nowadays? So we'll talk more. Okay. We'll talk more about that, as I said, next week. But says the Medrash here, it's a kavod Shabbos. And again, I think the easiest way, and I'm not being facetious, easiest way to think about that is, it's a candle at dinner. It adds a certain luster to the meal. It's a certain different ambiance when you have the candles. That's the first Medrash. However, the second Medrash, in source number 5, the Medrash said, Chum and Parshas Noach, says something slightly different. What's the source? Here it's almost a halachic question. Ner HaShabbos Minayin. Shinamar V'Karosol HaShabbos Oneg. Not out of kavod Shabbos, but out of Oneg. Now, to be fair, the R poskim, if I recall, I think it was the Levush, one of a contemporary of the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch from that same generation. He says Oneg here and Shalom Bayis are the same thing. Shalom Bayis isn't a third reason. Shalom Bayis is a variation of Oneg. Oneg means enjoyment. And as I say, not stubbing your toe, or if you want to be more lachachila about it, being able to have nice conversation. By the way, it's not just conversation. What else is better in the light?
Food.
Exactly. They've done studies, right? When you see the food, and especially if it looks pretty, it tastes better. So the Oneg is enhanced. Your Shabbos experience, your Shabbos enjoyment is enhanced. So it seems to be a little bit, again, these are not exactly very far afield concepts, but they are different. Kavod and Oneg we usually think of as different mitzvos, and yet here you have the Midrashim perhaps arguing which one it is. The point actually reaches its critical mass when we take a look at the Rambam, because the Rambam is not two different people, and it's not two different sources. The Rambam is the same person, And in the same collection, in his Mishneh Torah and Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam seems to contradict himself. After all, if you take a look in source number 6, the Rambam starts off by telling us what we already know, Halakha Shabbos, Eino Rishus, Im Ratza Madlik, Im Ratza Madlik. This is not just the kind of thing, if you want to do it, great, if not, not. Right? Netilat Yadayim L'Achila, right? You don't have to eat bread. You don't eat bread, you're not going to have to wash your hands. Right? Netilat Yadayim is a mitzvah. But it's the kind of a mitzvah which you have the choice to avoid. And did nothing wrong, just don't eat bread. However, says the Rambam, no, Chova! You have to do it. You have to light candles. He then gets into the issue of men and women, which we'll get back to. I'm going to skip that part for now. And then he says, if you skip to the third line, and all of this, Umadlik Esaner, Shezeh B'chalal, Oneg Shabbos, says the Rambam. This is part of the way you enjoy Shabbos, is by having the candles. And he adds, as we had mentioned before, that we make a bracha on the candles, because it's a rabbinic mitzvah, and we make brachos on all sorts of rabbinic mitzvahs. As I said, most opinions, including the Rambam, is that candles are rabbinic. So here the Rambam says, in the beginning of chapter 5, Perek Hey of Hilchos Shabbos, in a large presentation in general about Oneg Shabbos and Shabbos candles, the Shabbos fulfills Oneg. Who was that like? Which Midrash? Midrash number 5, exactly the Tanchum. However, 25 chapters later, which is not a short distance, but still we're in Hilchos Shabbos, so it's still relatively close by, the Rambam in Perek Lamed says the following, because it's a long paragraph, and I cut it much shorter than it is, but the Rambam is very, very detailed, listing all sorts of Shabbos preparations. The Rambam starts off, Mesader Adam Shulchanos, this is source number 7. Be'erev Shabbos, right, if you can, you're supposed to even set the table before Shabbos. You're certainly going to clean the house and do other things before Shabbos. Tarach l'takein beitomi be'od yom, you clean the house, you wash the floors, you wash the dishes. You set the house up, of course, before Shabbos. Why? Mipnei Kavod Shabbos. And the Rambam, again, in where I put those three dots, the Rambam has all sorts of other things that we all do in advance to prepare for Shabbos. And then the Rambam adds, almost as like an aside, he tucks it in with all these other things like cleaning the house and all that stuff. V'yeh ner daluk v'shochan aruch shakol elu l'chvod Shabbos hein. Not Oneg Shabbos, but Kavod Shabbos. So this is a little bit more confusing now. Right? Again, it's not, again, we're not exactly talking about like kosher and treif. These are not exactly opposites. They can complement each other. But nevertheless, usually we view them as two separate mitzvahs, two different halachos. Haraya, the Rambam puts them in completely different chapters. But that just begs the question, which one is it? So the obvious answer would seem to be, since the Rambam wasn't schizophrenic, is that apparently the Rambam felt it was both. But then, that further begs the question, well, what exactly is the difference? This contradiction, you know, sometimes I try to teach my Talmidim this, that sometimes when you have a question, so you have to resolve it just to get out of the problem. But very often, and certainly with the good questions, the questions aren't problems to be solved. They're actually opportunities. Because in answering the question, that will give you far greater insight than you ever had into whatever the issue is beforehand. So here also, this contradiction in the Rambam, it's not just that the commentaries look to explain the Rambam, as we would say, to fa'enfert the Rambam, just because, you know, but that's what we do. It's better than that. By doing this, by resolving this Rambam, that actually will require us to refine our understandings of these two terms. So I want to briefly share with you three different explanations, but the beauty of all three of them is they're not just explanations of the Rambam, as important as that is, but they're more broadly insights into what the difference is between Kavod and Oneg, terms which I think we often bandy about, but perhaps we never had any halachic precision to define our terms. Well, that stops now. Because now you'll know what you're talking about. So the first possibility that's suggested by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan was a slightly older colleague, so to speak, of the Mishneh Berurah. They did overlap a little bit, but a little bit older. So he didn't live that long ago, the Aruch HaShulchan. If anyone knows the name Rav Henkin, so Rav Henkin was a Talmud of the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay, so we're not that far away. We're not that far away. The Aruch HaShulchan was a classic posek from a very famous rabbinic family, the Epstein family. So he quotes this in source number 8, he quotes the Rambam, he refers to the contradiction, and then what does he say right away? But Sarach Lomar, we have to say, that Tarvaihu Isnu, that they're both there, they're both true. Okay, well, what does that mean? They're not redundant. So what does it mean that they're both there? So says the Aruch HaShulchan, it depends on where. B'makom she'ochlin have a mechvod Shabbos. If the candles are in the room where you're eating, that's a covered Shabbos. What I think he means, I'm in source number 8, where it's underlined. The candle at dinner, an ambiance, a certain chashivas, a certain luster comes with the candles. That's where you're eating. But if you have any lights in the bathroom, light in the bedroom, and in the hallway, so that says the Aruch HaShulchan b'shaare chadarim have a me'oneg Shabbos. And here he makes the point as clearly as I could, not talking about anything more elevated. Shali kashab hilchato, you shouldn't stub your toe. The oneg slash lambai says you shouldn't stub your toe. So why do you have candles? Right, if you're sitting at the dining room table, you're not going to necessarily stub your toe, but it's not the same kind of a meal. So you have the Shabbos candle, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that's a kavod of Shabbos. So, okay, so that's for my meal. What do I need candles in the hallway for? So this is that is for your oneg, right? We might add the bathrooms and other such things, right? Light helps in lots of places and for lots of reasons. So that's the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't give some fundamental distinction between the two. The distinction is location. Location, location, location. It depends on where. Here's only two locations. Location one with the food is covered, and anywhere else is oneg. That's his answer. I don't know if it's the best answer, but that's his answer. That's number one. The Machzik Bracha is a sefer by the great, great Sfardish posek, the Chidar, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulai. He wrote, I think, over 100 Svarim, or something like that. One of the most prolific authors we've ever had. So the Chidar, in one of his many, 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 many Svarim, also deals with this problem. And he has a slightly different, I think very fascinating explanation. Efshar liyashev, source number 9, ki oneg Shabbos, hu davar nosaf al minhag hachol. What does he mean by this? Let's take a step back. I want to elaborate on this because this is so profound. If I could just get my kids to internalize this, they'd be halfway to having a happy life. What is oneg in life? Oneg is more than you're used to. Right? When you spoil a person, you ruin them, as the saying goes. Because what's left? At some point, no matter how good anything is, it gets old and it gets dull. So if you have endless money and endless opportunities, you can always raise the bar, then you'll always have more and more oneg. That might not be healthy for other things, other reasons, but at least it's theoretically possible. But for the rest of us, we really are in trouble. Because at some point, you run out of new things you can do or afford, and if you're just used to it and you had everything already, there's no more oneg, right? Does this not resonate? This is a Sfarish halachic sefer, but I think there's something very insightful and profound about life in general in this. Says the Chidah, you know what the definition of oneg is? It's all relative. It all depends on what you're used to. If you're used to nothing, a little bit more than nothing is a machaya. But when you're used to something very nice, then a little bit less is terrible. Says the Chidah, it doesn't depend on location, it depends on person or situation. So when the Rambam speaks about candles being oneg, says the Chidah in the next part, the Perakeh, when he talks about oneg, Iri Ba'ani, he's talking about a poor person. I'm going to remember the time of the Rambam, right, there was no electricity. So says the Chidah, we're talking about someone who was so poor, they didn't have candles. They didn't have, you know, some oil lantern or something. So during the week, with that ani, that poor person, when the sun went down, it was dark. 6 nights a week. 1 night a week. Shabbos candles. Ah, a tainuk Shabbos. Ah, a geshmak. Light! You and I take it for granted. Unless we go to the Blind Museum. Right? How much more oneg do you get from your sight after you go to the museum? Because you can try to appreciate it. So here, someone who sits in the dark 6 nights a week, he has candles, she has candles on Friday night. For that person, Perakei of the Rambam. Candles are oneg Shabbos. What a machaya, what a delicious way to have a Shabbos. However, he continues, Barov bnei Adam, end of the second line, most people, Baruch Hashem, are not that poor. Shemad Likin b'chol leilot. They have candles, they have light every other night. So what's the purpose of the whole of the week? Therefore, lachino kahogim ibod yom, kavod Shabbos. But the fact that they have special candles that they arrange in particular, but kavana for Shabbos, it may not be any extra oneg, because they have the candles anyway. They always have candles. But this is a special candelabra, special candle, special oil. That's a kavod for Shabbos. So as I say, if you want to look at it in the narrow sense, it's a very beautiful way of explaining the Rambam. It's a good, it helps us refine our definitions of kavod and oneg Shabbos. Oneg are things that you would do, that you do for yourself on Shabbos that you wouldn't do or don't usually do during the week. Right? A more delicious cut of meat, maybe meat at all, as opposed to chicken, as opposed to tuna, as opposed to whatever. That, it's something you're not used to. You put on clothing you don't usually put on, you feel better about yourself, you feel good, you put jewelry on. That's all an oneg Shabbos. It says the Rambam, but something that's more or less standard, but you still do it in a way that is a miyuchad for Shabbos, that's covered for Shabbos. But it's even, it's oneg if you're not used to it. And I guess I say, without, I don't want to get to digress, but I just can't help, again, the little bit that I did say, I think there's something very profound and insightful about human nature and life. Again, adults, kids, we all need this lesson that I think is relevant to what he's saying, if we would go far afield, which I don't want to. But that's explanation number two. It's not a contradiction. Oneg and kavod are different. One's what you're used to, but you did it still a special for Shabbos. The other one is beyond what you're used to. The third answer I want to share with you is perhaps the most well-known. And if you ask me in my kishkes, I think it's the right one, in terms of at least the Rambam. I think it fits in best with what the Rambam actually says. And that is an explanation that is originally suggested by the Vilna Gaon, and you have it for yourself, and you have it for you in source number 10 in a very short line. And it actually became more well-known in recent years because the Briskers, Rav Velvel Soloveitchik and the Briskers, they have in their writings, they developed this idea even more expansively. But it's really, whatever the Soloveitchik said about it, it all goes back to the Vilna Gaon. It's really in this one line of the Vilna Gaon, which I gave you as source number 10. And the Vilna Gaon points out that it's not location and it's not person, it's timing. It all has to do with when. Says the Vilna Gaon, where I have it underlined in source number 10, when is oneg? B'Shabbos atzmo. But kavod hu b'erev Shabbos. Says the Vilna Gaon, think about it for a minute. What you do to prepare for Shabbos in advance of Shabbos, that is a signal, that is a sign that you respect Shabbos. You have, some stam person knock at your door 10 minutes before Shabbos, and you're a very generous person, so you'll say you have an extra bed, you let them stay. But did you prepare for them? I wasn't even expecting you. Or for that matter, you know someone's coming. But, it's just the 18,000th seminary student that you've had, or whatever the case may be. So you're nice, you have them, not everyone has people over. But, you clean sheets, whatever, okay. But it's, your parents are coming. Your married children or grandchildren are coming. A big rav is coming. Oh, on Wednesday already you're cleaning, and no one's allowed even to go into the room after Thursday, and you cook their best food. Well, because that shows the kavod you have for the person. And how do you show kavod? Not by what you do once they land at your doorstep, but what you do in advance. That shows your reverence, your awe. So what we do for Shabbos before Shabbos, that's kavod. What we enjoy on Shabbos, that's oneg. So says the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon didn't tease it out, but the Briskers, as I say, made it more easy to understand. What is Shabbos candles? The answer is, Shabbos candles is both. It just depends on when you're asking the question. When you light your 18 minutes, or your this many minutes, or that many minutes before Shabbos, so then it's not yet Shabbos. You did it in advance. Yes, it's true, you'll accept Shabbos simultaneously, but you're doing it before you had to. Right? So that is a kavod for Shabbos. What happens the moment Shabbos comes? The same candles, you don't have to blow them out. The same candles take off one hat and they put on the oneg hat. And now for the next hour, hour and a half, whatever I have left, I have this beautiful light in my house, I have this beautiful light in my dining room. That's oneg. It's not depending on what person, like the chida, it's not depending on what part of the house, like the Aruch HaShulchan, the same candles in the same room for the same person can be both. It has to do with when. And if you go back to the comments of the Rambam 4 and 6 and 7, you'll see this is why I think that the Vilna Gaon is correct. Because it's very, very meduyak in the Lashon of the Rambam. Because in the place where the Rambam spoke about kavod, look at source number 7, All the other examples, that's where the Rambam said that Shabbos candles are kavod. All the other examples in source number 7 are also things that you do before Shabbos. Clean the house, prepare, cook, all that stuff before Shabbos, the Rambam calls kavod. But in the previous line, the Rambam was speaking about not before Shabbos, but you should have a ner daluk b'Shabbos, on Shabbos itself. So the very candles that might have been kavod for the past 10 minutes, come sunset, and they become oneg. So whichever one it is, or maybe according to the Vilna Gaon, it's both, that is the basic obligation and the different reasons for Shabbos candles. So now I want to move on to another issue, which is very germane to this audience, which is why is it that you light candles and I usually do not? What is this thing about women and candles? And the truth is that we have an idea. Again, you know, it's another Gemara. I don't believe I put it on the sheet, but this is one of the things that the Gemara says that if a woman is not careful about, can lead to particularly catastrophic consequences. So obviously there's a association going back to the Gemara, if not earlier, between women and candles. And pretty much every home, I assume, that we grew up in or have our own homes, the standard person to light the candles is the mother, is the wife. I'm not going to discuss, because we can't discuss everything, the issue of single girls. In some families, there's a minhag for girls to light. Most families that I'm familiar with, the minhag is not. There's no right, there's no wrong. Whatever your minhag is fine. But either way, it's not the boys. It's not the husband. There is something about women and candles. So the truth is, if you look in the Mefarshim, there are two reasons given. One is a little bit easier to swallow, and the other one is just is. But if you take a look in sources number 11 and 12, the Rambam says, a traditional one, probably the kind that they usually teach, says the Rambam in source number 11, Nashim mitzuvos al davar zeh yoser min ha'anashim. Men are obligated to, as we'll see in a moment anyway, but it's already clear in the Rambam. It's not that men are not obligated, but women are more obligated. Bottom line, says the Rambam, fair enough, but I have a wife who has a full-time and a half job, so I know about this as well as any husband possibly could. But nevertheless, says the Rambam, historically, traditionally, and on some hashkafic level, even hayom hazeh, right? We have a phrase, when someone says akeres habayis, they're not referring to the husband. Right? There's a certain identity and responsibility that the mother of the home takes. Plenty of bad that comes with it. Hopefully there's more good. Plenty of responsibility, but hopefully many benefits. But it is what it is. Traditionally, it certainly was the case, and it's still true in many families. And again, it's not just about hours of the job. It's a certain mentality. As I say, my wife has a very, very, very full-time job, and yet somehow she's still the Akaris Abayas. I help more than when she didn't have such a full-time job, as I've mentioned in the past, the squeegee story from 2 weeks ago. But I know you've been trying to get that vision out of your head. I'm sorry for even reminding you of it. Yes, yes, squeegeeing. Yes, yes, okay. Does that add to your kavod Shabbos? Forgive me, I ruined it for you. So nevertheless, says the Rambam, candles, more than other things, candles are associated with the home. It's like a mitzvah habayit. And therefore, the woman who embodies and represents the Jewish home, so it became associated. It's not a strict obligation. If the man would like, they'd also be yotzei. But traditionally, this is how it evolved, says the Rambam, based on this notion of the association of the woman in the home and the central role that the candles play there. In fact, the Rambam adds, Abel Pikein, Tzarach Ha'ish L'Haziran, Ulevdok Osan, Akach Lamer Lanshe Beso, etc., etc. The husband should take a role. The husband shouldn't feel that he's potter. Right? This is not like doing a Hefsek Tara, which is the obligation, or counting Shevin Akiyim, which is, you know, Hilchos Nida, which is the woman's responsibility. The Torah says, V'saf for Allah, the woman is responsible for that mitzvah. This is not that. From the rabbinic, from the kavod oneg perspective, it would be for men and for women. Nevertheless, because of this traditional reason, women take more responsibility. But, says the Rambam, men shouldn't feel that they're somehow pater and think, get confused that this is my wife's mitzvah. It's not your wife's mitzvah, and therefore you should try to do something as well. In many families, I try to do it as well in my family, the husband will try to put in the oil or clean the wax out if you use candles. There should be something that is keeps the husband connected, and that's already in the Rambam. The tour, just to be fair, I don't want you to accuse me of hiding anything from you or, in spirit of intellectually honesty, The tour quotes a medrash, an esoteric kind of a medrash, but the tour made it a little more mainstream, which gives a second reason, which is a little bit less sublime, and one you won't hear, as I say, in any Sheva Brachos Torah. Says the tour, first of all, Nashim Musharopo, again, women are more obligated. Why? Because of the medrash. Nesha Kavsa Nero Shel Olam. It all goes back to Chava. Yes. The neshama is the Nair. Originally, according to the Medrash, Adam and Chava were going to live forever. There was going to be no death in the original plan. What brought death to the world?
Chava.
The sin of the Eitz Hadas. Who brought the sin of the Eitz Hadas? Chava. Well, the snake, he got his punishment. But also, of course, obviously, Chava has a heavy burden and role to play in that. And therefore, in a larger metaphoric sense, says the Medrash, again, it sounds a little bit heavy, but the Medrash says that somehow Chava, representing women with a capital W, are responsible for, quote-unquote, extinguishing the light of the world, meaning they brought death to the world, and somehow as a tikkun for that, women took upon themselves the responsibility or became responsible for that added light that we bring into the world every Shabbos. So one way or the other, you prefer one or both. Either way, certainly, whatever reason you give or don't give, that is certainly the minhag. But as I mentioned, aside from the reference of the Rambam, in source number 13, the Mishnah Brura, again, even more recently, says very clearly, Umikal makom tov sha'ish yitaken haneros. A man should have a role. A man shouldn't get confused. And if you want, we could add, you know, we can go back, you know, I don't see anyone who says this, but I would say, you know, Adam wasn't guiltless in that chayt either. The husband should also play a role in adding some light to the family into the world. But ultimately, the obligation traditionally is accepted by the mother of the house. So that's reason number...
Excuse me, isn't there a more positive reason too, the fact that women are more intuitive, maybe more connected with the spirituality and the Hashem? Isn't there anything more...
I would agree with everything you just said. Not only because of where I'm standing.
But nobody else says
that. But I'm not aware of anyone who makes a connection between that and Shabbos candles. But if you find it, you'll let me know. Okay? But I'm being serious. I haven't seen it. So far we've seen all the basics of the obligation. Kavod versus Oneg. Shalom Bayis. We saw the issue of women. What about the timing? What about the timing? So in source number 14, this is what I said at the outset, what's the earliest time to light? So just like we saw last week when it came to quote-unquote accepting Shabbos, says the Shulchan Aruch in source number 14, you can light before Shabbos, no problem, you can accept early Shabbos, ubelvad, shiehei mi plag hamencha ulamal. But it can't be earlier than plag hamencha. It can't be earlier than an hour and a quarter before Shabbos. I say, in the winter, no one's thinking about doing anything too early. We're just happy to get it on time. But in the summer, when we have more time and daylight savings is coming faster than you know it, people have a little bit more breathing room on Friday, so you might be tempted to make Shabbos too early, maybe. So the answer is you should know it's an hour and a quarter would be the earliest time. And when I used to be in charge of making up the Zmanim for our shul in Baltimore, so once we had the summer schedule, so we always used to send out two times for candlelighting. The second time was the traditional 18 minutes before candlelighting, but then there was always an earlier time. People used to get confused. What do you mean? If I don't make it at whatever that time was, you know, six, whatever, I can't light afterwards. I have to light that. So then I realized I had to be more precise. So then from then on, we used to write earliest time, you know, from six, whatever, you know, but if you light afterwards, it's also fine. That's also early Shabbos. It's just not, so why do we put down any time? Because you couldn't do it earlier than that. You couldn't do it earlier than that. Okay? Good. Yes, please.
Is there a connection between that, the candlelighting, and the
not that I know of. But like I said, I'm happy. If you could find the association, please let me know, okay? I didn't see it, okay? Anyway, turn over the page. Now I want to discuss something that's related to the timing issue, and this will be the next few minutes where we'll bridge last week's class and this week's class. Last week's class talked about accepting Shabbos specifically early. Here, forget the early or late. You're doing it when you're doing it. But the idea of women accepting Shabbos when they light, and here I want to discuss the whole issue of, ladies, look up for a minute. What does all the gyrations come from, right? This is before aerobics, but even before Pilates or you know, Zumba, we had the halakas neros dance. Until my wife took over a seminary, I was sure that must be some secret class that all the seminary teachers give on, you know, Anyway. So where does it all come from? Why do we do this? So says the Ramban, source number 15. Haminhag she'osa ha'isha ha'madlekes mekabeles Shabbos b'hadlaka. That is not, as you see from the Ramaz Loshon, it's a minhag. It didn't have to be this way, but it is evolved, and this is going back now hundreds of years, that the assumption is that when a woman lights Shabbos candles, her default, we'll discuss in a few minutes the issue of the Tanai. I promise you we'll talk about that. Can you bypass the default? But for now, let's stick with the default. The default is that when a woman lights, well, let me, when she takes care of the candles, bracha, lighting, I'm being imprecise now on purpose, she's accepting Shabbos upon herself. Aval, this is important, we discussed this a little bit last week, Sharbnei Abayis Mutar B'malacha Ad Baruch Hu. If it's not yet Shabbos, if it's early, and the community hasn't yet accepted Shabbos, we talked about that last week, then in theory, people could be still doing malacha even after the woman of the house is not. So, that's fine. Most of you know that. Simple. However, it's not so simple, it causes a problem. And that is in source number 16. We have the following tension, which we have to figure out a way to resolve. We have two halachic principles, which come in and collide with each other. Number one, we have the principle which we just enunciated, which is that when the woman lights, she's accepting Shabbos. So there are many things that Shabbos involves. But one of the things that includes in Shabbos is we usually frown on lighting fires, extinguishing fires. That's one of the things that just, we don't want Shabbos. That's one halachic principle. But there's another halachic principle, which is not as serious as Chil Shabbos, but it's a halachic principle which we generally are committed to. And that is when you are, let's say, shaking your lulav, when do you make the bracha? When you light Hanukkah candles, when do you make the bracha? So this is a principle which is in the Gemara in Masechet Pesachim, kol ha-brachos, or kol ha-mitzvos, mevarchin alav, over la'asiyasa. Here the word over, ayin vav beis reish, means lifnei. We make brachos, excuse me, before we do mitzvos. Right? Almost no exceptions to such a thing. Okay? We try to do it right before, not too early, not too late, right before. What's the problem? If we'll wait, so which one is it? So this tension led to two opinions in Machloke in source number 16. Yesh Omrim, says the Rama, first opinion, Shemavarchim Kodam Hadlaka. You should make the bracha, and then you should light. And according to this opinion, there's no problem. Why? Because apparently, according to this first opinion, when does the woman accept Shabbos, to be more precise? When she actually lights. So you have your cake and eat it too. You made your bracha before the mitzvah, check, and you didn't do anything wrong because now I can still light because it's not Shabbos yet until I light. Great. The second opinion begs to differ. V'yeshomrim, second opinion. Shemavarech achar hadlaka. Even though we generally try to light, to make brachas first, but we have to sacrifice that. Why? Because if not, we'll have a problem. Because if we, according to this opinion, when does the woman accept Shabbos? When she makes the bracha. The bracha, and this is actually what I was referring to last week. I don't know if you caught it. I said, we talked about how do you accept early Shabbos. Remember? So I said, a person could just say to themselves, I accept Shabbos. Or something like that. But I mentioned to you, one of the way people accept Shabbos is through candles, and the way I said it last week, which to be fair now is only true according to one opinion, but this is what I said, you can check the videotape, this is what I said last week, that when a woman will say the bracha, Sheikh Shem Sazon, Hadlik Ner Shel Shabbos, obviously she is, whether she realizes it or not, whether she's doing it deliberately or not, she's acknowledging Shabbos, that she's accepting Shabbos. You wouldn't like the candles, it's Shel Shabbos, it's not Shel Lifnei Shabbos, it's Shel Shabbos. So that is the second opinion. Once you make the bracha, it's already Shabbos. So could you imagine it's Shabbos Hashem? Mechal Shabbos. You know, like right away. It would be like crazy. So therefore, the second opinion says that's just impossible. And therefore, we have to pick the lesser of two evils. And we sacrifice the usual ideal of brachas before. And instead, we light first, then we make a bracha. Now, in both of these formulations, we yet haven't seen anything about the gyrations. So the Shulchan, the Ramah continues. Ukidei shiyehei over la'asiyaso. How can you, the Ramah is trying to sneak out, to eke out some semblance, any little bit of a mashuhu of that first idea of l'chadchila, we prefer to have the brachos early. So says the Rama, well, it's not exactly, but maybe we could chop a little bit, eke out a little bit of this over, this that making a bracha for, by what? Lo yehena mimena ad la'achar habracha. By not having any benefit from the light. After all, let's go back to the source, the original source. Shabbos candles are all about the benefit. Whether it's the ambiance, not stubbing my toe, the shalom bayis, the oneg, the food tastes better, everything's better in the light. So if I don't have any hana, if I'm not getting any benefit from the light, now technically I did light already, but still says the Ramah, that's a little bit of a pre-mitzvah stage, because I haven't even benefited yet. And therefore he says again, now how can I do that? Right? If Baruch Hashem, Hashem blessed me, I'm pokeach ivrim, I can see. So if I light the candles, how am I not having benefit from it? So says the Ramah, the second line where it's underlined, here comes the gyrations. Umasimin hayad lifnei haner. We put our hand in front of the light and cover our eyes so we don't see the light. Achar hadlaka, right after we light, but before we make the bracha, and only after we cover the light or cover our eyes, then we make the bracha. Achar kach, and after we've made the bracha, mesalkan hayad, we remove our hands. Vzem mikre over las yasun. Or I would add, it's sort of a bidyeved minor over las yasun. Again, we did light already, but why do we do all this? So that we can, so to speak, have our cake and sort of eat it too. If we could light, assuming on the one hand we're worried that maybe the bracha is part of the mitzvah. On the other hand, we also, and therefore you accept Shabbos, excuse me, when you make the bracha. On the other hand, we still want to have, and therefore we have to make the bracha first. On the other hand, we don't want to give up totally, if we can avoid it, the idea of making brachas early. How do we do all that? So says the Ramah, I have an ingenious solution. Even though I'll technically light before I made the bracha, but if I quickly cover my eyes, and therefore I don't see and enjoy any of the light, that's a little bit still called over l'asi yasan. And therefore quickly cover my eyes, make the bracha, and then voila, I open my eyes, and I see the light, and therefore I've made the bracha before, not before I lit, but at least before I benefited from the light. And says the Ramah, accurately so, in our world, v'chein hamina. This theory, this creative solution that someone thought up, in fact, became the widespread meaning. I will only add one thing.
It's only from the time of the Ramah that women were doing it?
How much earlier, I don't know, but he's the first that I know to quote it. How early this goes back. But one thing is, there ain't no gyrations in the Ramah. So that, I think, are the Nashim Tzidkaniyos have somehow added that. And again, it's fine. Maybe someone will tell me that they read somewhere, they heard a shir, that there's all sorts of Kabbalah in this. I don't really know. Or maybe it just feels better to psych yourself up. One thing for sure, it adds a little anticipatory oneg for the rest of the family that gets to watch this. But, okay. Okay. Fine. It's two opinions. So that is our minhag. The Ramah says it is the Ashkenazi minhag. Again, I'm not even teasing with you. I just thought it would be good, a little light moment in the shir. But however it is you do it, it's probably not Kodesh Misinai, but it's okay too. Whichever way you do it, you just cover your eyes, you go like this three times, you make a tefillah, all those things which are nice, but just real, I'm not against them, chas v'shalom. But don't confuse, you know, the cherry on top for the actual cake. That's not the mitzvah. And the reason we do the basic covering is not for some Kabbalistic reason, it's not for some mystical reason or any skula. It's a very serious halachic concern, which we're trying to, so to speak, cover our bases. Like often is the case, especially something that's so, I would say, precious to the Jewish people as Shabbos candles. It's not surprising, especially with the Gemara itself telling us that Shabbos candles have a certain skula. So over the generations, somehow it evolved, these things of the extra tefillos and the waving of the hands and all that. It's all fine. Just realize, though, what the meat and potatoes are. And that is the basics are the lighting of the candles and the covering the eyes to avoid this halachic problem. Yes?
What oil?
I would try to fit all the sources on one sheet. So one source, that the last source I took off the sheet, so it's not on your sheet, is a safer call. I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, or, you know, if
they use oil.
No, I'm saying, so specifically, there is a safer called the Ktsos HaShulchan, which I didn't put on the sheet, but you can buy it in your local bookstore, or email me and I'll give you the text. He was, if I'm not mistaken, I believe, Avram Chaim Noah, I believe he was actually a Lubavitcher, but pretty well-known, generally respected posek. I believe he lived in the earlier part of the 20th century, not that long ago either. So he writes that there's a lechachila for shemen zayis. He writes that there is an ideal for olive oil, and he was a rabbi in Yerushalayim. So it could be that that influenced, but I don't know that it goes back earlier than him. That was the earliest source I could find. And I went beyond with you. When I grew up, well, many women used wax candles, but many others used oil, and they didn't live in Yerushalayim. So, and I've never lived in Yerushalayim, so...
I think all over the Middle East they used oil. They didn't have wax candles.
Okay, so it could be.
That's European.
Okay, it could be a practical thing too. It could be a practical thing also. We'll get to Bli Neder when we have the time. Sources 27 and 28, the last two sources on the sheet, relate to what you should light with. So I do want to get to it, but what would have been 29, which I didn't have room for, was this Ktor HaShulchan from Rabbi Chaim Nov. Okay, now let's discuss the issue of Tanai, which is very often an issue. The idea of, as I said before, that what we had done the last 5 minutes was the issue of default, namely, all things being equal, a woman accepts Shabbos. When she makes the bracha, when she lights, tamach lokes, the hands, we just did that.
But that one thing, if a woman and a husband and wife are staying different places...
Next week's year. Okay. That all the quirky cases are next week. Right, you remind me, okay, the hospital, the hotel, all that stuff is next week, okay? So, the default is that the woman is accepting Shabbos. With the bracha, with the candles, one, the other. But can you bypass the default? And this is the question of Tanai. Can I make a condition, can I be conscious as a woman lighting, where I say, I don't want to accept Shabbos now. I need the extra few minutes. I have something else to do. So this is a machlokes. If you look at source number 18, Shulchan Aruch says, first opinion, the Yesh Omrim, She'imas ne'korim she'edlika she'ene makabela Shabbos at she'omer hachazen baruchu, Moil. The first opinion says you could make such a condition. Again, if you don't think about it and you're in your default automatic mode, then it's Shabbos when you light. But if a woman is deliberate and conscious and says, I don't want to accept Shabbos now, says the first opinion, that works. But he says that this, but secondly, he says, the Yeshua Rim, the second opinion, She'eno Moila. Right? This is a runaway train. You cannot stop it. You light Shabbos candles, it is Shabbos, period. You cannot get in the way of that. That's the second opinion. It's a machloket, two opinions. Says Ramah on the second line, he paskins like the first opinion. He says, the Ramah, the Ashkenazic psak, is that women only accept Shabbos with candles, imlosh hisnatchila, if she didn't make a condition, she didn't deliberately choose not to. But what does he imply? If she would choose, then it would not be Shabbos. Now, because of this machlokes, though, we have a tradition, which is an important one. In source number 19, says the Mishnah Berurah, quoting from earlier sources, given that it's a machlokes, Ain even for Ashkenazim, says the Mishnah Berurah, ain lahasnos ki im litzorach. You shouldn't just do it stam. Now again, tell me, how many Jewish women are doing anything just stam right before Shabbos? Right, there ain't no stam. Right, you're busy. You pretty much would have to almost automatically have a good reason. Fair enough. But what the Mishnah Berurah says, quoting earlier poskim, is it's not just that one is default and one is preferred. The better, the consistent, the typical thing to do is to accept Shabbos then. If you have a really good reason, then you can. So, for example, let's say a woman who's so hectic, she hasn't just a shower yet. That would be a very good reason. That would be a classic reason. Or maybe issues with the kids or something like that. Those are classics. If someone really has an issue which you think is gray or on the margins, so you should ask a Shaila, if you can, in advance. And sometimes it's not always in advance. I once got pulled out of my own shower, I can admit now, years later, because someone was asking me a shaila at the last minute. So sometimes shailas do come up at the last minute, and sometimes rabbis are even incredibly dedicated and selfless and are accessible. I said sometimes. Even at those, give me a second, even at the last minute. However, that, as I say, would be a typical tzarach. But I would say the ones I said before, for your own getting used, or maybe you'd have to just turn off the fire for the soup or something like that. Those are things which I think are clearly litzorech. And there might be other things in theory you could think of that are more frivolous. But what's interesting is that not that long ago, someone sent a shaila to the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Oldenburg Zatzal, and asked something which was right on the line. Which is, on the one hand, something which is totally ruchani and spiritual and idealistic, but on the other hand, totally unnecessary. And that is going to the Kotel for Friday night davening. No one needs to go to the Kotel. I have to break it to you and to all the yeshiva guys. You don't have to go. It's still Shabbos without it. On the other hand, it's a very beautiful thing. What could be more lechachila than going to the Kotel and being makabel Shabbos there? Wonderful, right? So, you know, put your halachist or lawyer hat on.
Excuse me, what was the answer?
I'll get to it in a second. I promise. That's okay. It's okay. I'm trying to build up suspense. No problem. So, how do you define the word tzorech? If you take it very literally, a need, does anyone really have a need to go to the kotel? Not really. But if you say tzorech meaning good reason, well, maybe this is a good reason. So they asked the Shaila to Tzitz Eliezer, source number 20. And it's worth reading, again, I obviously abbreviated it, but it's worth even reading the sample text that I have before you, in source number 20. Odot Nashim Yekarot, right? So you see from the beginning, Rav Oldenburg writes with great respect and reverence to the women who want to do this. He's not, even if he'll say no, he's not ridiculing them, he's not criticizing them, he's not poo-pooing it, he respects it tremendously. These precious women, Shachoshka Navshan Lalechas Lakaba Pnei Shabbos Malkasa Ayad Srid Beit Mikdashenu Akotel HaMaravi, right? They have this tremendous spiritual yearning to go accept Shabbos by the remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kotel HaMaravi, and they want to know, Sheyuchul and So L'Sham B'Halichatam Gam She'Alichatam Kfar Nero Shabbos. If they already lit candles, can they still take a taxi, right? If you live in the old city or somewhere nearby, then you just walk. It's easy. But if you live somewhere further and you want to take a taxi, are you allowed or not? And he adds, "Vinishalti alzem mikama." I've been asked by many people this. It's not an uncommon question. So he says as follows. He wants to know this issue, and he ends up saying, "Tochalna hanashim lihisan." No, bishat hadlakan henrot. They are allowed. Tochalna. They are allowed. Tuchalna. They are allowed, thank you. They are allowed to make such a condition. But tochan and so, and therefore, ayedei kein b'halichasan l'sham. They can go in a taxi, they can take a ride there. And then he adds, but don't we say, ein lahasnos kim l'tzorech? Didn't we say that you should only make this condition if it's a real, quote-unquote, tzorech? So he says here, the last line and a half, aval yesh lomar, shegamze lahasnos kdesh yuflo ayedei kein l'malot sama'anon ruchani. Sama'on anafshi, yes. That thirst, that spiritual desire is very much letzorech. A woman who wants to, for l'shem shamayim reasons, to go daven by the kotel, what greater need could there be? L'shov hashra ilait, right? Miyuchedet, to get to somehow drink up, to internalize, to imbibe this spiritual elevation, inspiration she'll get from the kotel. Nikra gam kein letzorech k'dei sheyuchlu l'hisat. Could be? Okay, I never see that. Next time I give the shiur, I'll have to quote that. Well, if I can find it. I'm just going to quote you. No, really, I really am. She said that she heard that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach disagreed. Yes?
The question that arises is, what is better, to light candles on time and make it tonight, or to wait till you're ready and then light candles?
No, late. That's what I don't
know. Which is better? Because I've been told it's better to light on time and make it tonight and then do what you have to finish.
You're talking about like finishing up something in the house.
Yeah. I heard the opposite. I think in the machine.
I have a hard time. It's a great question. I have a hard time giving a single answer, only because I could really see it depending on the circumstance. Meaning, what would be the? My first instinct is to avoid the tanai. That's my first instinct. My guess is that the reason that you or someone else might have been told not to is for some reason that the worries you'll forget. In other words, once you delay, if you're always used to it, habits for good and bad, but habits are strong. Habits are strong. So once you get out of the habit, the fear might be, you know, you're used to lighting, like you said, when you hear the siren. If you don't do that and you tell yourself, I'm going to light later, well, then you might get caught in what we're going to do next week, which is what if you forget to light at all. So I'm guessing, if you ask me from a strictly halachic perspective, it would definitely be better to wait. Because the tanai is bidyeved. Lighting early later is as long as you light before shkia, it's technically okay. But my guess, and again, I'm not questioning it. On the contrary, maybe this is very good rabbinic advice. My guess is that, again, you have to ask the person who maybe gave you the psak, but my guess, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking it, looking back, is that the reason to tell somebody not to do what I just said would be if you were worried that once you get out of that habit, maybe you're much more prone to forgetting. So if you pick a tanai, why not do that, since that insulates you? Which, I understand that. I could see, to me, it's almost a tie. I could see really both ways, and to me, the only reason to prefer lighting with the tanai is just so you keep the habit. Once you get off the habit, you never know what'll happen this week, what'll be next week. I could see that. On the other hand, you know, tanai is really considered, but the other question which it raises, which is to me a gray one, I'm not sure if I can give an answer off the top of my head, is how strong do you see that 20 minutes or that 18 minutes? It is, again, there are places where that's the minog, and that's what you usually do, so maybe you want to keep that up as well. On the other hand, it's clear, from a strictly halachic perspective, it's clear that there's nothing wrong with lighting 8 minutes before, 7 minutes before, 5 minutes before, 1 minute before. So it's a little bit of a shikul, and if you've received a psak or you have a rav that you could get a psak from, I would say either keep the psak you were given or ask the rav you usually ask to. I could see, you know, arguments for both sides. I think it's a virtual talk. Yeah. It's a great question. Generally, we assume that as long as you think it, it's okay. Okay? Yes. Okay. Let's move on. What about men? Just, you'll forgive me. I'll indulge, okay? I've given you so much of my time. It's a little bit for me now. What about men, or the men in your lives, if you want to give them learned advice? If a man is lighting in whatever circumstances, you have a single child or grandchild, or you're away, and let's say, for argument's sake, your husband is lighting, whatever the case may be. So does this whole waving the hand thing, and does that all apply to Tanai and Kabbalah Shabbos, does that apply to men? And you understand that men aren't so coordinated, so if it did, we'd have to practice, and you know we can't multitask either. So let's see what the halakha says about men. Source number 21 says the Mishnah Berurah, Ima ish madlik afilu kishum mevarech al hadlagato leka minhaga umutar b'malacha mekamakam tov lahasa. Says the Mishnah Berurah, technically speaking, letter of the law, the idea that Shabbos is implicitly accepted at the time of candles is limited to women. Meikar hadin, a man who's still assuming he's going to go to shul, is subconsciously or otherwise still not having accepted Shabbos, he knows he'll do that in shul, and therefore technically, says the Mishnah Berurah on this point, a man who lights candles could still do malacha. But, says the Mishnah Berurah, given that it's questionable on some level, says Mishnah Berurah, l'chadchila, if you were giving a priori advice and recommendation, you would tell a man he should make the tanai, in other words, meaning he should be conscious and deliberate. I am not accepting Shabbos. Light. If he didn't, and he, you know, I didn't take the children off the fire or whatever, and he called me, so you'd say there would be a difference between if the wife or the husband called you. A woman who didn't make a tanai and just lit, it's too late. There's nothing you could do. The default is a woman accepts Shabbos. But a man who didn't make a tanai and just lit, the default is he did not accept Shabbos. So that's when it comes to the more serious issue of the malacha. If you look in the next source, 22, the Bir Halacha, that's also the same author, the same Chavetz Chaim, in his more in-depth, extended essays, he quotes a machloket about the following, about the hands and all that stuff. He says, Mashma b'divrei Achaim, that's one of the earlier Achronim, da'afilu hachi anoshim yadliku, yafrosu yedehem v'achar kach yivarchu, mishim de lo plug. He says, really, listen, if we assume that men are not accepting Shabbos when they light, so there's no reason for them to cover their eyes either. The whole covering the eyes thing was because a woman's going to accept Shabbos when she says when she lights them, the bracha and all the problems. But if you assume that the men aren't accepting Shabbos until they go to shul anyway, so you pull the rug out from under. There's no necessary, any no need at all. But yet, says this first opinion, better to do it. Lo plug, we have an idea sometimes in halacha that we don't like making exceptions. It gets confusing to people and whatever. So in general, this has became the thing. Everyone covers their eyes, men and women. That's the first opinion. However, he continues, Aval medibri ha-go'on Rabbi Kiva Eger and other poskim, muchach de bezei yivarchu v'achar kachayiku, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, no, it doesn't make any sense. You would say lo plug about a woman that she should maybe not change things up. But to say that because of what women generally do, once in a yovel, the man should do it? He says there's no need for that. There's no halachic reason for a man to worry about what the candles and the bracha and the covering of the eyes. It doesn't make it, the whole, that all is a result of an assumption which is not true about men. It's only true about women that they're accepting Shabbos. So then you have the whole issue, bracha versus candles, but you don't have any issue for men. So personally, the few times that I've had to light, I never had to light as a single person, but the few times that I've lit as a married person, so I have not covered my eyes or done the whole thing. Except for once when my kids saw me and they got all upset, so I did it just to make them happy. Because, you know, it's not, you're not really Jewish if you didn't cover your eyes. And then I just covered my eyes like this, and they said, but that's not how mommy does it! So, you know, whatever. I have the least amount of voting power in my family, by far. And it's also, you know, my wife is for sure number one, I'm for sure last, and the kids jostle for who is in the middle.
Well, that's how it should be.
Of course! 100%. My father taught me you could either be right or be happy, and I want to be happy. That's advice for all husbands. Okay.
Are you talking about
Yom Tov life? No, that was just, that's a life advice.
No. Are you going to talk about your
No, and that, there's nothing that I've said that wouldn't be true. Again, if someone asked me before...
Could you light women
No, there's different minhagim with that. There are some, I think it's in my family, I think it's a Hasidic basis, but I think there are others. It actually goes back to earlier sources. In fact, maybe Blinetter, if I remember, I'll try to bring in the source for you next week, because it was the mother of one of the poskim, the Sma's mother, has the Chiddush all about how Yontif should be different. But in most cases, certainly in the origins of Halacha, the assumption was the timing and certainly the mechanisms are all the same. But there is this second minhag which evolved, which the first halachic source is one of the poskim, Shulchan Aruch, quoting his mother, who had a Chiddush, she was a very learned woman, how she thought that Yontif lighting should be different in terms of the timing. That the whole need for lighting beforehand doesn't apply. Nothing, just to be clear, no one would say it's wrong to light before Yom Tov comes in. But this great tzaddeket thought, in order to show that there's nothing wrong with lighting once Yom Tov started, we should have like a kavana davka to light after Yom Tov, to show you see it's mutter. You shouldn't be confused that you couldn't light on Shabbos, so we light before Shabbos. But you can light on Yom Tov, so maybe it should be allowed. So that's where that came from, as I said. In certain, if that's your family minhag, it should be your family minhag, and if it's not, it's okay.
But there is a time limit.
Some, yeah. Well, what people do is not necessarily what it says in the Shachar, but again, you can't, there's pretty much nothing wrong. You can't go wrong. The stakes, ladies, we only have a few more minutes. We have 6 minutes. The stakes are much higher on Shabbos to get it right. On Yom Tov, pretty much almost anything you do would be fine, and that's why I say whatever minhag you have in terms of the timing would be fine. Okay, two last things that we could try to finish up. Number one is, how many candles? Right, this is a big nafkamina for your wallets. How many candles? So says the Mishnah Brura here in source number 23, technically speaking, mihu, mishimner, dai ner echad l'chud. The basic mitzvah is one candle. Ner Shabbos is one candle. That's the basis. If you only have one tea light, you're yotzei the mitzvah. However, Shulchan Aruch, source number 24, quotes the most prevalent custom, the earliest custom, was to always have two candles. And the two are based on what we've been talking about the last few weeks, Zachor v'Shamor, the Dibur Echad, the two sets of Luchos. The Rama adds, I'm not sure if there's any good reason for it, he says some have three or four. I've never seen anyone who arbitrarily and consistently always had three or four, but at least the Rama in Krakow cite such a minhag. But in source number 25, the Mishnah Berurah quotes other minhagim, which seem to have fallen by the wayside, but they were prevalent enough, at least in his day, that the Mishnah Berurah quoted. Some quote, he says in source number 25, Zion Neros, well, at least that would make sense. Seven candles, 7 days of the week. Others light 10 candles. Asaras Hadibros. Again, nothing to do with you married or not, how many kids you have. This is from the moment you start lighting, 7 candles, 10 candles, 2 candles, 4 candles, different minhag. As I say, in our day and age, these are pretty much, in my experience, have all fallen by the wayside. You have pretty much two prevalent customs. One is that there are people who light two, which happens to be in my family. My wife also lights two. But you have this other minhag, which is fascinating, because you see, ladies, we just read the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah, and there's no reference in any of these sources to the issue of adding a candle every time you have a child. I have no idea really where it came from. Or the silversmith, I mean, somebody. Yes. But I did find a tshuva, a more recent, late 20th century tshuva that does try to explain it. And this is the tshuva in source number 26, the Mishnah Halachos. This is from Menashe Klein. He just died, was it a year or two ago? It was many, many years post-war in Brooklyn, and then the last years of his life, he opened up shop also in Ramot. So he was back and forth with Ramot in Brooklyn. He was an Ungarisher. He was one of the big Hungarian Hasidic poskim post-war. And Rav Menashe Klein has a tshuva where he suggests two reasons to perhaps explain this minhag of adding a candle for every time you have a child. One reason, he says, which he himself dismisses, and I won't dwell on it, A, because he dismisses it, and B, because it relates to a topic that we're going to discuss next week. But he says, typically speaking, if again, imagine back in the day when recuperating from childbirth was a much more significant, you know, now after a day they kick you out. But it used to be, you convalesced in the hospital for quite a while. Okay. Says Mishnah Halachos, either you forgot or you weren't even well enough. You were just too out of it, to lights. He says, most of the time people forgot. So because it became somehow associated, when you have a child, you're going to at least miss 1 week. So he just said, you know what, we're not going to wait till you forget. Or just because of the chachila, every time you have a child, we're not going to punish you, quote unquote, we're just going to call it a minhag instead. That instead, every time you have a baby, just add a candle. And he rejects that right away. He says he doesn't think that makes any sense, because if a woman forgot, or because she was incapacitated, or just too preoccupied by having a child, by having had a baby that week, she wouldn't be obligated to add a candle. So he doesn't really like that. But that's his first suggestion. His second suggestion, at the end of the line, Tam Acher, he says, is based on the Rambam. The Rambam, he's a little far afield, the Rambam is all about Hilchos Chanukah. The minhag, which some Sfardim, not many, but some Sfardim still keep to this day based on the Rambam, is that when they have, let's say, I'm imagining a husband, a wife, and three kids. There's five people in the house. So they would light five sets of candles, but only the father lit. He would light all five. That's the Rambam's opinion when it comes to Hanukkah candles. And there are, depending on the... He lights all of them. The Rambam says he lights all of them. There could be 10 people in the family, 7 people in the family. So you have all the Chanukiyot, but only the father lights. That's the Rambam. So akin to that, says Rambam Ashi Klein, maybe like that, Hachanami, B'Shabbos, Ha'isha, Badlakes, L'chol B'nai Abayis, Ner L'chol Echad. So for whatever reason, when it came to the one candle mitzvah called Hanukkah, we said that the father of the house should light on behalf of the whole family. But when it comes to the regular weekly Shabbos candles, then we say the mother of the house, the woman of the house, should light on behalf of all B'nai Bayis. So it's not that we're adding or something like, you know, because of a punishment or because you forgot or the hospital, nothing like that. Just whenever the family grows, we light, just like you would add another menorah if there's another member of the family too on Hanukkah. It's not so convincing, to be honest with you. But, you know, it is. It's one of these menhagim, which at least for many, unless they have a strong menhag otherwise, if I took a poll, the average woman likes that. Most women that I know, they think it's very beautiful and it's very nice and it looks prettier even. So unless either you have a strong minhag not to, or a strong husband who doesn't want to, or strong mother-in-law or father-in-law, whoever's paying for it in the new minhagim with the candles and the shanks. But either way, as I say, whatever minhag you have, two is wonderful minhag, you add one, there's nothing wrong with it. You could add 7, you could add 10. The more candles, the better. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But Ad Hayom Hazeh, I tell you, I'm not really sure what the halachic basis of that minhag is that's become so popular in our day, but there's nothing wrong with it. If you add a candle every time you have a child, matov, you should have more children, you should have more candles, it's all wonderful. Last but not least, we'll end in the next minute, which is, we alluded to before, but it used to be, historically, a much more complicated and central issue, but now it's really not so relevant, and that is the issue of what is the source of fuel, what do you light with? So this is the famous Mishnah, the whole parak, the second parak of Masechah Shabbos, called Bamei Malikim. When you go to shul on Friday night, in many places, they say Bamei Malikim. It's all what you light with. And it all goes through what the waxes are, what the oils are, or what the wicks are. It says the Shulchan Aruch quotes a lot of this, but we could dispense with all of it. The bottom line is, everything is really kosher. There's no halacha, not with oil, not with olive oil. Everything is kosher, provided two things. Number one is it doesn't smell bad, because a lot of the old, ancient fats would give off a terrible odor, then no one wants to be in the room. The whole purpose of the candles is to enjoy the light. If you're running away from the odor, then that doesn't help. It's counterproductive. And the other thing, there were certain wicks that just weren't, you know, they would go out every second. So if it's a reliable material for a wick, and it's a good oil, which is not going to flicker, and it's not going to smell bad, so then it's all fine. So even though there's this ideal for, even the Shulchan Aruch writes, Shemen Zayis, you know, why was Shemen Zayis ideal? It's because it was effective. Again, this Chabad posik that I mentioned before, the Ketoner Shulchan, so he thinks it's connected maybe to the base of Migdash or other things, but more the simple understanding is just a practical, pragmatic issue. What is going to be more effective and consistently reliable? So says the Mishnah Berurah already in the Mishnah Berurah in his day, let alone with our fancy paraffin, other materials, that, you know, the sources of fuel that you and I have, but says the Mishnah Berurah already in his day, he says, "L'hakol zeh l'fi'inyan haner." Says you don't have to get hung up on what exactly is neft and all those materials and the mishnayos, and you have to get your arch chassidur see what the Pamei Malik is talking about. Says Mishnah, it doesn't really matter. Hakol, it's just to do a test. Does it work or doesn't it work? Hakol l'inyan haner. And then he says, "Ubaner shalanu." And with our candles, he says there's no problem at all. Meaning he's talking about the kind of wax candles that you and I grew up with, which nowadays are a little less in vogue. Now they have the color paraffin and all that other stuff. So my wife always used to light candles. And then we saw her sister had this beautiful candelabra because she had different colors for everything and it was so fancy. So we converted and we became a paraffin family and we have different colors and now we have a purple one which matches our purple chairs, and I don't make fun of it because it's actually very nice for the covered and for the oneg of Shabbos. So I'll see you in Meretz Hashem next week, and we'll pick up with part two of the shiur.